This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Now listen to this. You are listening to AWOL Radio on CKMS The Sound 100.3 FM in Waterloo.
A quick message to let you all know that CKMS will be changing our frequency early in 2017 to 102.7 FM. Our friends at CKRZ from Oshawegan will be expanding their broadcast range, and Waterloo Region is strengthened by having another voice in our community. Check our Twitter account, Radio Waterloo, and our webpage, soundfm.ca, for updates on this exciting transition, and thanks for your continued support as CKMS enters its 40th year. As the contract faculty at Wilfrid Laurier University negotiate a new contract, many within the union have recognized their struggle as another moment in the wide-scale resistance to neoliberal ideologies. With WLU and other universities operating with a capitalist business model, the schools are furthering their reliance on contract faculty. While teaching more classes than their full-time counterparts, contract faculty are paid considerably less than full-time faculty, receive no benefits, and are not paid for the research they must undertake to produce quality work in this competitive, publish-or-perish atmosphere. With universities accepting more students and charging more for tuition than ever before, there have been marked increases in the number of high-level administrators running the schools and the remuneration they receive. However, at every contract negotiation for the workers, cost-saving measures are forced on support staff and faculty. In this interview, recorded December 30th, 2016, we speak with Dr. Steven Svensson, Doc Svensson on Twitter, a contract faculty professor teaching at Wilfrid Laurier University and a member of the communications team for the faculty association there. We speak about the contract negotiations at WLU through a lens critical of neoliberal ideologies and with a discussion of their impacts on communities and lives. As the final edits were being put on this interview, word was received that a second round of conciliation has led to a tentative agreement being reached between WLU and the contract faculty within the faculty association. Details have not emerged about the deal, but check WLU.ca and WLUFA on Twitter for updates on the ratification of the deal. AWOL Radio here in Waterloo Region, our new studio, a year-old studio at the Beamer Box Factory. Our guest today is Dr. Steven Svensson. He's part of the Wilfrid Laurier University Faculty Association Contract Staff Communications Team. We're going to talk today what's going on at Wilfrid Laurier University with contract negotiations for the contract staff, as well as what's happening broader with labor at the university and labor at universities and the neoliberalization of the universities, of education, of academia. So thank you for coming today, Dr. Svensson. Anything else you would like to add to your introduction?
Well, other than, you know, the fact that I grew up on the traditional Tory territory of the splat scene people in the North Okanagan Shuswap, those are my stomping grounds, and it's important, I think, that we acknowledge where we're from, and in particular our colonial heritage as settlers, and I'm a settler, so it's important, I think, that we always sort of acknowledge that, and that here we are on the Haldimand Tract, which is territory that was given over to the Haudenosaunee, but also used by the Anishinaabe and the Neutral people, and just wanted to make that little acknowledgement.
It's happening at more universities, or starting to happen at universities, at least those kind of acknowledgement, land acknowledgements in cities and that, so thank you for acknowledging or bringing that up today. Now, how are things at Wilfrid Laurier University? What is going on with the contract staff?
Yeah, how are things? Well, I think contract faculty are getting to the point of being fed up with their treatment, and I should say what I will say is that there's, you know, contract faculty, and I'm going to call us contract faculty, even though they don't want to call us contract faculty, they prefer to call us contract staff.
Well, I will go with yours.
Yeah, yeah. And we actually, that's one of the things that we've asked for as part of the bargaining, is to be identified as contract faculty, and that's one of the things that they don't want to do. Anyways, there's a bunch of other things that they've done that are basically put there to put divisions between ourselves and full-time faculty to increasingly demoralize folks that are coming in as casual labor. So I think those sort of demoralize, and I quickly jumped away, but I wanted to say that we're not all the same in terms of contract faculty. There are contract faculty for whom some people have talked about them as moonlighters, or they might talk about themselves as moonlighters, is that they have another full-time job. And so that dropping in and teaching a course here and there, it's more like a form of leisure, I would say. And then there are folks like myself who teach a lot of courses at the university. And so, for example, I've taught four courses this past term and two courses I'll be teaching this next term. And we really get paid a fraction, you know, a quarter to a third of what a full-time faculty person gets paid. We get no benefits, which is actually shocking for people. No health, dental, medical, any of that sort of stuff. The other part of that is, and no security, you know, no job security. We have very precarious conditions that we work under. Yet they rely on us year after year after year to teach massive amounts of students. Approximately 50% of the students are taught by contract faculty.
I can remember as I was going through, more courses were being taught by contract faculty, and it was, I even noticed it back then that there was this reliance, as you said, the university started to rely on contract faculty, and I'm wondering why they were doing that and what that leads to for the situation today.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty plain why they want to move that way. I mean, it's essentially a cost-cutting measure, and you see this all throughout society. And I mean, the reason why it's news is because you have some of the highest paid, or the highest educated, not the highest paid, but the highest educated people in Ontario and in Canada and North America, England. I mean, this is going on, and they're experiencing the same sorts of precarious conditions that people that are at the bottom rung of the income spectrum and doing more janitorial tasks, things like that. And that's kind of why it's news. So I think, you know, really it's just, this is how we save money. And we know that there's a couple ways that you can save money as a capitalist, right? One, you put downward pressure on wages, and the other is you modernize and apply technologies that reduce your labor costs as well. And so it's really effective for the university in order to save costs to rely on contract faculty, and they refer to us often as flexible labor. That's the kind of language that they use. And so that, you know, we're often very specialized. We have certain things that we can teach, and they can just bring us in to teach a course and we're gone, right? And there's no commitment to us. And that's what they would sort of, almost this just-in-time production model sort of thing, right? Which is kind of, you know, I mean, obviously very effective from the point of view of the university. And typically they get very high quality instruction. You know, they get people that are really committed to teaching, but they don't want to pay for that commitment.
When I was mentioning, you know, more and more courses, and some of my favorite courses were then taught by contract faculty, there wasn't a difference in the passion towards the teaching. You know, it was the same thing. It was just they were getting paid less and supported less by the university. It is shocking to me. I didn't know there's no benefits. Yeah. That are given. So that's obviously one of their cost-saving measures is, you know, if they don't have to give benefits, they're saving there. And you said a fraction of the pay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I could make a comparison, typical faculty, full-time tenure track or tenured faculty, they'll teach between 3 and 4 courses a year. They may get a buyout sometimes on those courses. Just in terms of some other things that they're doing. Another component of what they do as full-time faculty is service to the community, to the Laurier community, but also the broader community. And the third element of that is research. Now, I teach a fourth-year seminar in environmental sociology. I teach sociology of youth. I teach intro soc. I teach qualitative research methods, a wide number of things. All of those things require me to be able to do research.
Right.
And the courses would not be the way what they are if I didn't have that research experience. So I'm doing research. I sit on committees. I mean, I sit on union committees. I sit on hiring committees. I sit on student committees sometimes. I volunteer my time in the broader community representing Wilfrid Laurier. I don't get paid for any of that. I get paid for course. So when I get, it's about $7,500 to $7,500 a course, depending on your seniority. And, you know, so your take home from that is less than $6,000, depending on other things that you have to pay, right? So you look at, if you compare, a full-time faculty person is pulling down on average over $100,000, and they're getting full benefits, right. So medical, dental. They're actually getting free education for their kids as well if they have children. Whereas a contract faculty person like myself, who's teaching more courses, close to twice as many courses a year, my take home is $36,000. I have no medical benefits. Mm. In order for me to make, and I'm a single father, in order for me to be able to make ends meet, I have to do other things. Fortunately, I don't like doing other things. I'd rather be researching and teaching and giving service to the community. But I build stuff, you know, to make ends meet in the summer. That's how I survive.
You don't get paid for research as a contract faculty either. So there's
no, and they don't regard us as researchers. They regard us as teachers. But in order to teach, you have to do research.
Right.
You know, in order to be an effective teacher.
Right.
And so all of us do research. So I mean, there's a whole sort of bullshit job that's going on towards the public. And I think if the public, and particularly the parents, actually knew the conditions under which contract faculty are working, they would be alarmed. And the whole other part of this is the university is, especially Wilfrid Laurier, sort of sets itself up. It's got, I guess, the Macleans ranked it as the, is not the, I don't know what, I want to call it the friendliest place on earth because it's like Disneyland, but in that sense, but it's the highest in student satisfaction.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, so it's great while you're there. They've got great clubs. They've got all these sorts of things. But the reality is what the students are paying for is an education and it's taking them into precarity. And so this issue of precarity needs to be addressed, not only for contract faculty, but for millennials and now Generation Z that is now moving through. I find it extremely ironic and in fact kind of disgusting that the university is essentially aiding and abetting this process of the neoliberalization and casualization of labor at the university and not standing up against it, because that's the legacy that they are handing on to the students that come through their doors is precarious employment. And we've heard it from our finance minister not too long ago. Hey, precarity is here. Get used to it. Well, no. You know, no. That's an ideology.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's an ideology that we need to fight. And so our Liberal government, our finance minister, I mean, this is what they've bought into. And we know that it's not working. It's causing massive crises all over the world. There's a lack of a social safety net for people. I mean, if you look south, you know, this is one of the reasons why people are so irate, upset, insecure. It's because they're fundamentally economically insecure.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And we want to perpetuate that at the level of a university where it's supposed to be a seat of higher learning, of intelligence, of wisdom.
Well, is that the university or is that the academics? Don't they have power at the university?
Yeah, this is the interesting thing. I mean, so you've got your board of governors and you've got your Senate, the board of governments. And so I do, Gary Potter and I put together a documentary on precarious academic work. And one of the things that Gary has been trying to wake faculty up to is that we really need to take back the university. Hmm. What's happened at the level of the university is we've had, in particular at the level of Board of Governors, which is that sort of the highest decision-making body, it's basically filled up with business people who really can only imagine or look at the university as a money-making enterprise. And so that value of education has been marginalized. It's just not anything that they have a strong understanding or grasp of as a value. And I think that's part of the problem. So one of the things that has been argued for is that we have representation. Faculty has representation on the Board of Governors. you know, and even contract faculty have representation on the Board of Governors as well.
Well, let's get to some specifics about what's going on. Sure. For the contract faculty. You are mm-hmm. currently in negotiations. What's going on?
Yeah, we are in negotiations. We continue to negotiate. We're asking for really nothing. I mean, I kind of laugh at it because I really feel that the union doesn't ask for enough. You know, we should be. So we're asking for a 2.5% wage increase, right? When I go down the street to the University of Waterloo to teach a course, I get $1,000 more automatically. I don't have to, and there's no union there. I'm developing a new course in interdisciplinary approaches to leisure on my own. I said, you know, I really would like to get paid for developing that course. They didn't want to pay me for that either, right? They tried to get away with it. And I said, look, if I'm using my expertise, and my dissertation is on leisure, to develop this course, I want to get paid for it. And so, so I did get paid for it. And so I got some extra money there. So I've deviated a little bit, but getting back to that question, what's going on right now? Well, we are currently in negotiations. We've asked for, one of the things we've asked for is a 2.5% wage increase. And they've come back and they said that they only want to give us 1.5%, which isn't even the cost of living, yeah. right? And so, you know, that's, to me, that's insulting. Hmm. You know, that's an insult. Some of the stronger unions around, so if you go over to and look at York University, they get paid 29% more than we do. Wow. You know, there's a reason for that, because they've got a strong union.
Not because the students pay 29% more?
Yeah, exactly. But one of the things that we do know in terms of students is there's been increasing numbers of students, smaller class or larger class sizes, so the income per seat has been going up for the university. And right. at the same time, they're trying to put this downward pressure on wages. And so that's one of the things, just one of the things that we've asked for. Of course, we've asked for benefits. I'm not sure where that's at. One of the things that the universities, I mean, I'm not sure how much I'm supposed to say, but what I will say about the university is some of the proposals that they've come back with are frankly insulting.
Right.
They're frankly insulting in the way that they want to create a division between full-time faculty and part-time faculty and create sort of more disciplinary mechanisms that further create a kind of a schism in that basic principle of collegiality among academic peers.
We'll get to that in a second. Are you asking for benefits or any of the other regular?
We are asking for benefits.
And I guess what's the other one? Stability, like the ability
to actually plan your life. This is a foreign concept, but often we don't know what we're teaching until a month, and sometimes even 2 weeks before classes start. Because that's the way, I mean, so is there work coming up? We don't know. And so that's an awful position to be put in. And that's affected my life in quite a personal way, that inability to plan. I mean, obviously the added stress that it puts on a person and their family. Mm. But even just in terms of the kind of decisions that you have to make about employment and the kind of consequences that can have for family life. And so people often talk about the tar sands. And Naomi Klein, I'm sure you've seen This Changes Everything.
I think so.
And sort of one of the themes that's coming out of that is the impact on labor. And the tar sand, like people have to relocate in order to make a living. You know, they can't make a living in the town or the city that they live in. And so they have to move, and they move away from their families, and this has implications for family life. Well, I mean, I did a similar thing. I didn't know what I was going to... I think I had one course in the winter, and this was back in 2011. I had one course in the winter, and I thought, you know, like, I don't have anything secure. You know, what am I going to do? I got three kids, you know, and I got my partner as well. I'm not knowing what's going on, and it's a couple months before the term starts, and so there's a gig that came up at UBC Okanagan, which was basically a limited term appointment for 8 months, which was well paid with full benefits, right? And so I took that, but I mean, the relationship dissolved, and I ended up, and it might have dissolved anyways,
sure.
But certainly when I came back from BC, one of the things that was held against me was the fact that I'd been away. And so I think I had a custody dispute, and that definitely was one of the things. I mean, it turned out okay,
yeah.
You know, for me. But certainly, I probably wouldn't have had the battle that I had I not had to go away for 8 months. And did I have to go away? Well, maybe I didn't have to go away. But certainly, you know, you make those decisions based on what's available to you in terms of work.
Right.
And so it's very unfair to people to not be able to provide people with some kind of perspective on when they're going to be working.
Is there a bridge? Do they make it easy? You know, you've been teaching as a contract faculty for the past 5-10 years. You're coming on as an associate professor now.
You know, there's none of that. I mean, the only place that has some of that, to my knowledge, is York University. York University has some of that where people can transition in. There are increasingly what are called teaching professorships that are coming up, but those aren't earmarked necessarily for the contract faculty that may have been teaching there sometimes for 20 years.
Right.
You know, they're typically, there's no loyalty, you know, and that's one of the things that I learned very early on in the contract game is that there is no loyalty. Mm-hmm. And you get asked, I've been asked to do many sorts of favors for departments. You know, somebody's got sick, and this is even before I finished my PhD, could you come and teach this course? And I'd like, you know, I should be working on my PhD. Well, we really need you. And then you do that for them, and there's no, you know, there's no loyalty. It's not built into the system. You know, I think that sometimes departments would like to be loyal, but they really can't.
How is Laurier? I mean, in the spring, summer, the cleaning staff, the janitorial services, their union went on strike.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was some bad faith bargaining going on, or bad faith moves from the university, making announcements while they were bargaining. When are things heating up? Like, are things going to heat up, or are we going to have a... Are you going to be able to make an agreement with the university, and when is kind of the contract up?
Yeah, I mean, we're right now we've had a strike vote. We've already had a strike vote, so 95% in favor of strike, so that's very strong. And again, I think that speaks to a broader understanding among contract faculty that, you know, we need to take a stand, you know, that these things are going to be more fully eroded. And so we are still in negotiations. There's been, the university has called for conciliation, so there's a conciliator that has come in. They've had a couple sessions. They're going to start those sessions up in January. And then if it goes nowhere, there'll be what's called a no-board report, and I believe there's a cooling-off period of 7 days after that, and then we can go on strike. I think the feeling, certainly among contract faculty and among the full-time faculty, that at least that I know, is that enough is enough, you know, and we need to take a stand not only for contract faculty but for education. I mean, this erodes the quality of education when you have contract faculty that come in and can't be and aren't really being paid a living wage. It doesn't help them to do their job effectively, and you kind of get... I'm tired, you know,
right.
and you get ground up.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be, the university should be resisting that kind of a system that grinds people up.
Well, let's go to break, and we'll come back. We'll talk about, you know, what's happening between the faculty, the contract faculty, and the full-time faculty.
Sure.
And we'll get into the neoliberalizing of the university and education and academia and, well, everything. But we're gonna go to a song, you know, make things happy. We're gonna go up back on the Chain Gang from the Pretenders, 1982.
I mean, Chrissy Hynde was just and I missed that concert. I had to be somewhere, unfortunately, but she was with Stevie Nicks in Toronto.
Oh, really?
Not too long ago.
Huh.
Yeah, in November. I missed that was a sad day for me.
Well,
we get to hear it now.
Sound FM, here it is. That's the Pretenders with Back on the Chain Gang, the KMS, 100.3 in Waterloo, Ontario, Radio Waterloo. Today we have Dr. Steven Svensson in studio with us. Today we're talking about contract faculty at the university, or Wilf Laurier University, under contract negotiations for the last little while, and things may come to a head in the new year in terms of whether or not they get a fair deal from Wilfrid Laurier University. Before we went to break, and before we got into that last little discussion, we were talking about, or you brought up, Stephen, the idea of like fracturing between the faculties. So the university at Wilfrid Laurier, you have the faculty association, but you have different bargaining units for full-time and contract?
Yeah, and that's and we negotiate our contracts at different times, right? So that's problematic as well, and it doesn't do either of us any good. And one of the other things, I guess, is that has been stated and is evident is that full-time faculty and contract faculty, they do have different interests. And often it's been cast as full-time faculty trying to get their piece of the pie at the expense of contract faculty, right? But, I mean, my experience of full-time faculty, granted the full-time faculty that I typically run with are maybe a little bit more on the radical end of the spectrum. I mean, they're very sympathetic to contract faculty, and I think in particular those that are in the social sciences and humanities, they have an understanding of what's going on in terms of this notion of neoliberalism that we've been talking about, and that we need to resist it. And so that they see, you know, in particular people like Gary Potter, who's been very vocal for years on this issue and has put in, I would say it's his cause celebre, you know, in terms of fighting this, because he sees this contract faculty fight as where we have to put the pressure in terms of preserving an education that we can call an education, you know, that we can be proud of. And so, but I just wanted to say, you know, that Gary Potter, who I did this documentary with, Contract Faculty and Justice in the University, has been concerned about precarious work at the university for contract faculty for quite a few years.
Where can you check out that video or
well,
more information?
Well, it's not going to be on YouTube. We do have a Facebook page for it, so check the Facebook page out, Contract Faculty. There's a little trailer on there. So it's Contract Faculty, Injustice in the University. There's a Facebook page. There's a description. I've shown it down at Brock.
Yeah, you've toured a bit.
I'll be hopefully going down to Windsor with it. We showed it at the Princess. We showed it at a theater, at the Royal Theater in Toronto. And we'll be showing it at other places as well. Eventually, once we show it at Congress in the spring, it will go up on YouTube for everyone to see. And it's not perfect. It's got its flaws, but it's a great conversation starter.
Sure.
And it opens the door to the understanding and into precarious work, not only for contract faculty, but for the population in general. And what a negative impact this has in terms of people's health and well-being, and in terms of the culture and people's basic security in life.
Well, there's been studies into the impacts of precarity. We know, you know, if people have if they don't have to worry about housing and food, shelter and food, you know, then that's a certain level of okay, you know, that's, and if they don't have to worry, you know, that they'll be able to have certain comforts, okay, you know, without really needing to struggle. It's just, I don't understand why universities would push a neoliberal model when it goes against the findings, you know, and against what we come to understand through studying a neoliberal model, that it doesn't work, that it doesn't work for the people, that it doesn't serve. Neoliberal economies don't serve the populace. It serves a small, very small percentage.
Absolutely.
Of those. You know, to bring in administration at the universities. How much do they make? I mean, it's ridiculous. How much percentage wise more they make than even the top faculty?
Yeah,
but percentage at, from the lowest paid staff at the university, you know, hundreds of times more than they make, plus free houses and cars every year and all that. But they can't give you health care. Can't make sure that you know that you have somewhere to come back to teach because you've done a good job.
That
the loyalty, as you mentioned. Now, do you have support from? You mentioned Gary Potter, of course. Is there other support? Like, does the do full time faculty come out to support?
I think they do. And what's interesting is, and we talked during the break about contract faculty as well, and so one of the big knocks against the contract faculty is, well, you know, where are they in all of this? Well, I'll tell you where they are. They're on the treadmill.
Hmm.
You know, they're trying to make a living.
Sure.
And so often these folks, and some of them are great colleagues, wonderful people, love them to death, they're highly stressed out, and they're moving from one university to another university to another university. Hmm. They're on the road trying to cobble together an income.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we had a faculty council meeting not too long ago, and we didn't have quorum, you know, and so there was a poor turnout from full-time faculty, and there was a poor turnout from contract faculty. But the folks that I knew mm-hmm. that were part of WLUFA as contract faculty that I knew personally, they wanted to be there, but they had to be other places.
Right.
I mean, they might live in other places. I mean, I've got the luxury, I guess, of being, which is one of the reasons why I'm here to fight. Is because I'm here,
sure,
and I've got enough courses at the university, and plus I like to fight, so I'm happy to do that. And somebody needs to do it, and so I'm in a position where I can do it, so I should do it. Is how I feel, but many people don't have that luxury that I have to be able to be here and to be able to be part of a fight for which really is justice for precarious workers.
Mm-hmm. We've discussed it, neoliberalism and the neoliberalization of academia, of everything, as I said before the break, how it's, what's the percentage now of full-time faculty to contract faculty?
You know,
do we know those numbers?
I should have those numbers at my beck and call, but I don't.
Sure.
And I would have to go back and I would have to check those.
Well, where's the best place to get more information about the Faculty Association and the struggle?
Well, certainly there's the WLUFA, the Wilfrid Laurier University Faculty Association homepage. So there, we do have a website. So that's WLUFA.ca. And then on Facebook, we also have our Wilfrid Laurier University Facebook page as well that you can go to for more information as well. And so, if people are interested, please check those things out, because not only do we post things about, you know, precarious work for contract faculty, but also precarious work in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that I want to get out to people in this little segment that we're doing here, is that this is a systemic problem. This isn't something that's just affecting contract faculty and parents and students that are going to university. And getting back to, this idea, I mean, what's happened in the last 10 years is there's been this massive growth in the bureaucracy. So you now have all these VP academics that have been hired in order to kind of administer the university. And so there's been this massive growth in those folks and a corresponding growth in terms of the salaries that they're paid as well. So really what's happened at the university is arguably we've been taken over by corporate bureaucrats, right? Whose sole job is to squeeze as much out of the university as possible in terms of dollars.
I can tip my hat to that if I was wearing a hat. I mean, when I was told, either shape up or get out of my PhD program, it was because, you know, here at University of Waterloo, we like to get our PhDs done in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Looked at, you know, what do you mean? How do you get good research? You know, how do you do full research plus the courses plus how do you do a good job? and learn something that you're then able to be an expert at, literally become an expert in that thing in such a short amount of time while you have all these other responsibilities. And the answer was basically because things are different.
Yeah.
You know, than they were. I asked, you know, well, how long did it take you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was, well, that doesn't matter. Things are different now.
Yeah, there's been this instrumentalization of education, right? Mm. And so that education is supposed to serve now business and industry. Universities are dependent on faster completion times, right? So then your programs are rated somewhat on how fast you get your graduates out, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. But I'm at the far end of that spectrum. Sure. In terms of getting out. I mean, yeah. It took me 10 years. I mean, I did take time off and I worked in between. But certainly I was given that leave. I think you were probably fell victim to some political stuff there.
Oh, there might have been that.
We don't want to talk about that. But certainly the university, and it's not just the fault of the university, of course, because it's part of something that's been handed down from governments. And there's been a decrease in the funding there's been an increase in the burden that's gone on students in terms of paying for their education. Astronomical.
Sure, yeah.
So the percentage that they're paying for their education is, you know, 10 times or whatever it is that it was 30 years ago.
Sure.
And then there's been this corresponding decrease in what governments have been transferring to educational institutions. And that's kind of created this ugly situation, which isn't really working for anybody.
No, well, that's just it. It's not... Well, it is. It's working for the administrators, as you said, this bureaucracy.
They're filling their boots.
Before it all crumbles or you know, like... People are still going to university. They're still aspiring to go there. But what are we getting from it at this point? If you know, the people that are there, the professors, the people that are there to teach these ideas and help inspire minds, aren't being given the basic. Yeah, the support,
yeah.
The basic supports from the university, from the administration. How are we to get that next generation of thinkers? If the teachers are all very stressed out or, you know, tired from driving to Hamilton and London and back up to Waterloo, as I know even 10 years ago profs were doing.
Oh yeah, for sure.
As contract.
And
it just seems to have expanded massively as. You know, as neoliberalism is being proven not to work, in study after study, P3s, you know, private-public partnerships don't work.
Yeah.
You know, the contracting out that cities do. You know, so many large cities around the world are now shifting away from that. They're hiring staff again to do the work because, this didn't work. Privatizing this didn't work. So we know all this. And the economists know this. They've heard, you know, the IMF knows this.
Yes.
The people at, you know, at the business program at Wilfrid Laurier University certainly know this. How does that translate then? How does it translate into keeping, you know, the money flowing to the top end, but not to the professors, not to the students?
Yeah, I mean that's a good question. I mean, how does that happen? I mean, there's a lot of inertia, right? That's going on right now, and a lot of resistance. I mean, part of it is. Oh, I mean, I don't want to psychologize this, but there's a tremendous psychology that's built around neoliberal ideology, which basically says, you know, that you deserve the lot that you've experienced because you've kind of tested yourself in the marketplace. And it assumes that people come from similar positions and that this kind of grand architecture of competition is going to magically place you in the positions that you're supposed to be in, right? And that you kind of deserve your lot. I mean, this is... And that's attractive.
Mm.
And that's something... And I think that some of the full-time faculty... They wouldn't admit to it, but they maybe even at a subconscious level, they agree with that. I mean, they believe that you know, that it's a dog eat dog world.
That's what everyone's taught
at the top, right?
Yeah, like,
exactly.
I wasn't taught about actual other political systems until I asked at yeah. university.
Yeah.
You know, like, how are...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I teach sociology of youth, and it's not me who's teaching this, but I, you know, I have a text that I use, and I supplement it with other readings. But the dominant theme of that text is that people are moving into a very precarious world. So globalization has done that. Neoliberalism has done that as well as part of globalization. And so people are, you know, they're disembedded. There's not a lot of security. And that's a tremendous thing for people to have to absorb psychologically, and just in terms of basic levels of health. So, I mean, and then our government comes along and sort of says, yeah, this is the way it is. So get used to it. No, you know, you need some basic sense of security, which is why something like basic income is going to become increasingly important. Like, we have mechanization, we have technology, jobs are going to disappear.
Right.
And so it's not a question that there's not enough wealth out there.
Sure.
There's tons of wealth out there. It's a question of distribution. And just because you happen to be as lucky enough to become a CEO, or maybe you're just a greedy bastard, and that's what you wanted to do, right, with your life, was pursue power and dominate people, and you're benefiting from that. That's all it is. It's exploitation. Your wealth is not generated from your efforts, people. It's generated from the earth and from the exploitation of others. You know, and that should be a basic thing that we understand, and hopefully we're coming to understand that a little better. But we need some help along the way. So places where casualization of labor and neoliberalization, the neoliberal programs are being implemented at universities in particular, that's where we need to resist, because apparently we're smart people. I don't know.
Well, that's what I was led to believe growing up, was that professors were supposed to be, you know, the people that we asked to help develop ideas around to deal with the problems that we're presented with in society and you know, the earth and space, and you know, like, yeah. That's why we had this whole, you know, experts, and yeah, but then yeah, it's a selective ignoring of experts that say, like, you know, well, social justice is part of this.
Yeah.
You know, No, that expert, don't listen to that expert. That expert doesn't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, anyways.
They're just flapping their gums.
Yeah. Yeah. We are at the end of our show. We could keep going, but...
Yeah. We'll come back again. I'm going to bring Gary in next time.
Yeah, it'd be good. And to bring it back, you know, to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, when you were talking about, you know, this land and the land you're from and the land we're on. And you know, in Waterloo Region specifically, you know, this is the money, the lease for Block 2, you know, that disappeared into government coffers and never got paid to the Haudenosaunee. So it's learning these things through at an academic setting and learning about you know, resistance to this, to neoliberalism. That's part of a very long tradition of resistance to capitalism, resistance to colonialism, to racism, to oppressions. And I think, yeah, as you said, it needs to happen. If it's not happening at the university, I think that's very...
I think a nice reflection of the
state of academia and perhaps even academics themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I want to be nice to my academic friends, but... If not fighting those that I know, as you mentioned, you know, those that I run with, are perhaps on the more radical spectrum. And so, you know, of course, these ideas that we're sharing today are just, you know, accepted among them, well, of course. But it does seem that there is some pushback, some like resistance to fully go for that, you know. Solidarity within the faculties and, like, really help each other out between the schools, between, like, academia as a whole. I don't know what kind of power, you know, academics could have as a large block in society if they were to push for things. But I feel, you know, there's room there. I think there's still respect for expertise. to some degree, and to be open for discussion, and not just like, no, I'm the expert and that's it. Like, mm-hmm. No, here's are the things that all of these examples have shown us. Anyways, I'm just flapping my gums now. yeah, we'll bring you back in to discuss round two, and maybe, you know, around the actual time when they get back at the table, or maybe after the table. I don't know. You probably can't talk during the cooling off period, or maybe you can.
I guess it really depends on what I want to do, right? You know, I know that on January 4th, we have a strike office now.
Okay.
So I should, and there's going to be a party at the strike office, and we want people to come out and take part in that. So maybe what I'll do is I'll get that information to you and you can post it.
Yeah, well, Wednesday, January 4th. Yeah. Will you put more information up on WLUFA.ca?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Right. Yeah,
well, people can check it out.
And the Facebook page too. So yeah, they can check that out there. And come and support us because, as I said, this is going on all throughout society.
Yeah.
And we need to resist it.
Yeah.
And wherever we find it.
And so time this is after
one of the,
time.
And
yeah.
This is one of the places. And the thing is, neoliberalism is a sneaky thing, and that's one of the things that's claimed about it, is it's difficult to understand.
Hmm.
And so in that way, it's very pernicious. It's not like communism, where it's kind of easily labeled and dealt with, right? And caricatured and pilloried. It's dirty.
It is.
It really is.
Well, it's an economic, political ideology wrapped very zero-sum game, you know, just slammed together, and it's just like, it's ugly, as you just said. Let's talk about neoliberalism perhaps at a whole other time, you know, how it's destroying capitalism.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of articles in the summer around that.
There
were good reads, and...
what's amazing is the Manchester Guardian, or it's called the Guardian now. I remember when it was called the Manchester Guardian, but the Guardian had some great series that have come out on the casualization of labor in academic settings. They've had a whole expose, and I'm wondering where our Canadian media is in terms of doing that. You know, where's even the Toronto Star? I mean, I don't think we can rely on the Globe and Mail to do that anymore, but
there's another show.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but certainly the Toronto Star should be doing some kind of expose on the plight of precarious work in academic settings.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, yeah, as you said, it's right across the board. Yeah. Anyways, let's wrap this up for today. Thank you so much for
My
coming
pleasure.
In today. Again, we were joined by Dr. Stephen Svensson of the Wilfrid Laurier University Faculty Association. It's the contract faculty, part of the communications team there. And yeah, as we say, we'll bring him back in, perhaps with some other members of the faculty association to further this discussion. You have been listening to AWOL Radio here on 100.3 Sound FM, CKMS in Waterloo Region. This is Radio Waterloo.